Introducing Bluehost Cloud, ultra-fast WordPress hosting with 100% uptime. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Of course you do. And now you can have all three with Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. With 100% uptime and incredibly speedy load times, your WordPress websites will be dependable and lightning fast on a global scale. Plus, your sites can handle even the biggest traffic spikes without going down or lagging. And with Bluehost Cloud, you get 24/7 WordPress priority support, meaning you're connected to WordPress experts anytime you need them. Not to mention, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. So, what are you waiting for? Get Bluehost Cloud today by visiting Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Audio. I'm Clint Emerson, and welcome to Season 2 of Can You Survive This Podcast, where the interview is just as dangerous as the scenarios I put my guests through. From hostage situations to natural disasters, carjackings, active shooters, and more, if you're looking for the skills necessary to survive these situations, then this is the show for you. Hey, thank you for listening to another episode of Can You Survive This Podcast? If it wasn't for you listening, we wouldn't be in the top 1% of podcasts out there, which is pretty cool considering we talk about survival and security. And who would have thought that a survival and security podcast would be up in the ranks there? So thank you for listening. Today, we have former Marine, retired Navy SEAL, founder of Contingent Group, CEO of Unafraid Brand, Eddie Penny is on the show. How's it going, buddy?
Good, buddy. Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
No, it's awesome to have you here. I mean, we live in the same metroplex.
I know, which is the size of like a state, it seems like. So,
and I think we've hung out like two or three times over the past like 5 years. So I'm glad you came in today and got on the show,
man. Thanks for having me, buddy. Yeah. Seriously. Appreciate
awesome. It. Awesome. So as usual, we're going to get into a little rapid fire, which is fun.
Let's go.
And it lets us get to know you. All right. I'm going to go through and give you choices. I'm going to circle those choices, and then we'll circle back around to the why.
Okay.
Eddie's why. All right. Marines or Navy?
Navy.
Navy. Yeah. All right. Platoon life or squadron life?
Squadron.
Shoot them or stab them?
Whew, stab him.
I can't wait to
We need to edit that one out.
All right. Compass or GPS?
GPS.
Ooh. On your feet or on your back?
Feet.
Yes. All right. Jump in, swim in, or ruck in?
Jump.
Jump, yes. Mom or the wife?
Wife.
Steak, chicken, or salmon?
Steak.
Steak. You look, if anyone is watching this, you notice he's definitely a meat eater. All right. Hell week or pull comp week?
Hell week.
Hell week, yeah. Iraq, Afghanistan, or Africa?
Afghanistan.
Afghanistan. All right. We went through those pretty quick. Of course, and I also have these random questions. Your favorite piece of EDC?
Ooh. My brain, for sure. Probably my spike. I got the half-face blade spike, and I love to carry that. It's like my favorite. I carry it to the gym. It's one of the things that's always on me, no matter what.
And they're kind of low vis, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you can kind of put it anywhere. They're lightweight.
They're very light. Yeah. They're very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
And it's going to puncture people.
Yes.
Yeah. Love it. Okay, so let's circle back around to the top. Marines versus the Navy. You pick Navy.
Yeah, the only reason why I said that is, like, overall, I would have to go with the Marines, but I love the SEAL teams, and for me, that was, like, such a passion as a child, so I'd have to go to the Navy, because that's obviously where the SEAL teams is, but if we're going for a branch overall, I would have to go with Marines, but the SEAL teams got my heart.
Oh, gotcha.
For sure.
Now you
like
did,
regular Navy? No, no thanks.
And you know both sides, right?
Right.
So you were a Marine for a while.
Yep.
And was it because you saw some SEALs and you're like, I want to do what they're doing, or how'd you?
No, I guess the rank thing and kind of the conventional piece kind of takes over, where, you know, uniforms, haircuts, that's more of a bigger deal than you doing your job. So that was a turnoff, and I was going to go recon, but they didn't have the funding. They weren't a part of, I think it was SOCOM at the time.
Right.
So I switched over, and when I did, that's when recon joined SOCOM, or MARSOC got picked up by SOCOM to get the funding. So, which I don't, I'm not pissed about my decision to switch over, because I mean,
you know
the deal.
Right. MARSOC ended up just getting all the operations we didn't want to do.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Platoon life versus squadron life. And we're probably going to have to give the listeners a little bit of a difference here. Like, that's really basically saying, hey, the regular teams or, you know, the dev group life, and both, you're surrounded by great guys.
Absolutely.
Squadron life, because why?
I guess it was just the pinnacle. It was like, okay, I need to get there. And it kind of weeds people out, not in a bad way. Just some people are happy being at the regular teams. I hate saying the regular teams. Then going to the other spot based off of like op tempo, family life, injuries, or just like, they're satisfied. It felt like home. Yeah. I mean, platoon life was awesome. I mean, getting there as a new guy, the first two platoons, it was so freaking cool to finally be there in a SEAL team. But nothing beats squadron life. It's just like, it's the real deal. You know, when you're going out the door, it was real, especially with what was going on around the globe. I mean, with the global war of terrorism going on, like, you're going to go get some, period.
Yeah,
so it just felt like home. It was closer knit, it felt like.
Yeah.
In your troop. You know,
right.
Not so much with the other ones, because you're always on different cycles for training and stuff. So
Yeah. Cool. Shoot them or stab them? Yeah.
Stabbing's more intimate. I just ate your lunch. Like,
yeah,
I'm in you.
Right.
So, but shooting, you know, you can do something at a distance. Close distance shootings, obviously you can see more details of the human, but stabbing's.
Yeah.
All were legal, by the way. it's just different. Yeah. It's a more adrenaline rush, I guess.
And don't you agree, like, the fact that you just had to say that they're all legal, because did you notice the same thing I did? Towards the end of the wars, they were run by JAGs. They were run by attorneys. Mm-hmm. They were run by these supposed, you know, rules of engagement experts telling us exactly what we're supposed to do, what not to do.
How is that?
Right.
How are they supposed to tell operators what to do? And
I know.
It's mind-blowing.
It's crazy.
That's when the political world comes in and you need to get out. It's not fair.
Yeah, and that's exactly my point. The mere fact that you had to say, well, they were all legal, by the way, means you were just as, like, under that pressure, sense of scrutiny.
Yeah.
Like, and you feel like you're being scrutinized before you even do anything.
Well, every kill has to be justifiable, obviously, and you've got to show that.
Yeah.
Prove
it.
Yeah, it's like,
it's ridiculous.
You're fighting the enemy that has no rules, then you're also fighting your own command at times that has a list, a laundry list of rules, as you know. So, yeah.
It's you versus the United States government, which sucks. Okay. Compass versus GPS.
It's easier.
GPS.
But
yeah.
Compass is more reliable. Like, there's no battery failure, no, like, all the settings. And I mean, I think you just got to do your declination and you're good to go.
Make
so,
sure
but still GPS. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some high speed GPSs out there. Like, legit.
Yeah. That new Sunto I'm wearing, no, it's the new Garmin I'm wearing. I don't have it on right now, but the Phoenix series, like, it's everything.
It's a microwave as well, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like the Apple Watch with, like, I don't know, you know, a whole lot more features. You can see yourself on a map. I mean, it's pretty
damn
cool.
Insane, man. Technology.
I know that you've been, and it's the reason why I asked you, on your feet or on your back, because for the past couple of years, I've watched you consistently now train both jiu-jitsu and probably Thai boxing, working on your striking.
More Thai boxing, yeah. Just different striking. So, definitely on my feet. I don't want to be on my ground if I don't have to. And I think the way I come up with that is, I mean, people say, well, 90% of the fights end up on the ground, which is true. But like in a bar, for example, I don't want to be on the ground, because a lot of people associate any kind of fighting or self-defense or whatever it is, and I'm sure you've seen this, especially in your line of work, with one assailant. Mm-hmm. Well, You know, if I'm a bad guy, I'm coming with my buddies, man. I'm making my job as easy as possible to get what I need to get or whatever it is. So I don't want to be on my back. If I'm on my back, I'm getting stomped. Right. And I've been on my back. I've been destroyed in Chicago when I first got to the teams, and it wasn't fun. But yeah, hit and run, man. I would try to avoid, get out of the situation for sure. That's my first line of defense. But yeah, on my feet. Absolutely. Yeah,
on your feet.
On my feet.
I agree. You need to get yourself.
But it's also obviously good to train in both because you never know. Situation dictates. You don't ever know where you're going to go.
I think you nailed it. For street fighting, the ground game, you just need to know it just in case.
Mm-hmm.
But ideally, you stay away from it.
Yeah.
You know, and you want to increase distance, increase the survivability, and being on your feet allows you to do so.
Yeah. And if you think about like jiu-jitsu, like we're training on mats. You start doing the stuff like taking dudes to the ground, like that could be cement. That could be broken glass. That could be gravel. Like you're jacking yourself up. Like if you're putting your face, which you would for like a mat, it's on gravel now. Now you're jacked up.
Right.
So yeah, it's a lot to think about.
No, it is. Yeah.
Just avoid.
Yeah, that's it. Avoid. Yes. De-escalate. That's right.
There
the
you
trending
go.
Word.
There you go.
All right. We did jump in, swim in, ruck in. You picked jump in.
Yeah. Yep. I was thinking the ruck, too much work. Swim, I'm cold.
Yeah.
The changeover sucks. Like when you've got to put your little warmies on and then just jump in.
Yeah.
You know, it sucks to prep for it and go on O2 if you need to, but just jump in and then rally up and then continue on mission.
Do you have a memorable jump in?
I never had any real world jumps. Never had to do any of those. But I mean, the training piece, I would like, this is a good way. I feel like it would be the safest.
Yeah.
Which it doesn't seem like it would be. Dude, too many things happen wrong in the water. You know, you got dudes fatigued from a ruck. But oftentimes you still jump in, you still got a ruck in.
Yeah. At least a little while.
Yeah.
Just not as far. Yeah. I think the jump in is like the stealthy, cool commando.
It is cool.
I mean, especially like, you know, if you can just shoot while you're coming in, like
exactly,
right? We do that all the time.
All the time.
Under canopy, shooting the bad guys with suppressed weapons on night vision.
I thought that.
Yes.
I thought that.
When are we going like, to
do
it?
That? We haven't done any training for this.
Right. Why aren't we doing this? Why aren't we shooting from under
canopy? We are not prepared.
All right. Mom or the wife? And you quickly picked the wife.
Because my wife would kill me if I said my mom. No, my wife's that's my partner. She's my teammate. That's my best friend. Hands down. I still love and respect my mom, but the wife, 100%. Yeah. Okay. 100%.
Yep. Makes sense to me. You don't want to catch shit.
Love you, baby.
That's right. There you go. He loves you, honey. All right. Steak, chicken, or salmon? You pick steak.
Steak. It just tastes the best.
Now, you're a workout enthusiast, obviously, like most team guys. Is steak, it's just because it's tasty, or do you look at the nutritional piece too?
I do. I know steak takes a while to digest. I mean, if I was going to be healthy throughout the day, I would be doing chicken or salmon, but night times I like my steak, man. Yeah. I love steak.
Right.
Like I really love steak.
Just a red meat guy.
Dude, I did the vegan thing for 3 months.
Did you turn pale, pasty, vampire looking?
Dude, it was great for a while. But then my energy dropped down. I was like, okay, I tried it. Cause I was like, I'll try anything just to try to see if it might work. It might not work. It did not work. I lost so much weight, man. It was not good.
When was that? Was that
it was right when we kind of started to open up from COVID back here in Texas, when things started opening up. Mm. It was around that time. I was like, heck, I'll try it.
Yeah.
So I tried it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't recommend it.
I haven't tried it. I still eat everything. I just don't get too picky.
I think they call that the bear diet. You just eat whatever you want.
Yeah. I always go, I'll just run an extra mile or two.
That's the way to,
I'll be fine.
Yep.
All right. Hell week or pool comp week?
Hell week.
You pick hell week. Yeah. Yeah.
You learn about yourself more. That's why I like Hell Week.
Yeah, and I think it's two different worlds too. Like,
it is.
You know, Hell Week, you're on the ground, cold, wet, and sandy.
Mm-hmm.
That pool comp week, you are underwater, and you're cold and wet. But I mean, you have that dynamic and that anxiety of sitting on the side of the pool.
Oh God, yeah.
Waiting your turn with your back turned. They don't let you watch.
Yep.
As each guy gets tested multiple times per day for a week straight. With different water evolutions. I'm just saying that because I don't know if most people know that Hell Week is like this weed out piece of first phase. And then you have pull comp, which is kind of like this weed out portion of dive phase. where you're on Jacques Cousteau, twin 180s. You have that double hose manifold regulator.
Gosh.
And the,
how old school is that stuff? That's like 1940.
It is.
It's ridiculous.
It is Jacques Cousteau. It's
insane.
And by the way, you know, you're having to do all these different things, these stressful events underwater. So for every team guy I know, you pick one or the other, really, because third phase, there really isn't a...
There's only a nut kicker there.
Yeah.
The 14-mile run, I think, was
14-mile run. Yeah,
that's
probably
the biggest.
And then when you get out to the island, you do that swim at night with the sharks.
The boogie night swim,
All right, so Hell Week, you felt like you learned more about yourself?
It sucked more. Like, I thought pool comp was easier, but Hell Week, you just learn about yourself. Yeah. I mean, it's... Hell Week sucks. You know that.
Oh, yeah.
It sucks.
Yeah.
But you learn about like what the human body can do, what you can do, what your brain can
shit.
Do.
I know.
It's like, that's worth its weight in gold, man. You take that. I mean, we're still living proof of that week.
Yeah. I still have. I don't know if this is the same for you, but like 20 plus years later, things that I had forgotten that happened in Hell Week, I'll suddenly remember that I didn't remember prior, right?
Like 20 years later, I'll see something or something. Yeah. You'll hear something. Yeah. Yeah.
Or it'll be a musky smell of the canvas of those tents they put us in right before breakout. Or there's odd things, and I'll go, oh, that's right. I remember like hallucinating during Around the World, the Marine layer rolled in. Mm-hmm. And all of us in our little boats were ducking as if it was a ceiling, you know, and not even really paddling. We're just floating. And looking. I remember just looking at everybody for that moment in time, and everybody was ducking down as if it was a ceiling caving down on us. But yet we're continuing to try and row and stay really quiet so we don't wake the ceiling up.
Yeah, there's some weird stuff going on.
Right.
For sure. My buddy saw because my boat crew. We were gonna go back to my apartment because I lived off base, and we were gonna have a big feast. So my buddy's like, "I see steak, I see lobster." Like he's seeing a menu in the sky, going around North Island for the Around the World or whatever.
Yeah.
I was like, "Bro, you're losing it." I never hallucinated. Like I mean, there was definitely some weird stuff that was going on. I remember they would be like chili dip or get in the water.
Yeah.
And I would just take my hat and dip it in. They'd like, "We see you not getting in the water." I'm like, "I think you can't see me, bro.
You can't see me.
You can see me.
And we don't care if you see me or not.
God, that
sucks. It gets to a point when you're like, I'm just a zombie. Yeah. Okay. And then the last one was Iraq, Afghanistan, or Africa. You picked Afghanistan.
More worthy opponent and terrain. Just more stronger opponent, I think.
Yeah. Now, in your experience, I think initially most people don't. Maybe everybody knows this, but as the wars continued, we knew, all right, Al-Qaeda.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get there and you realize, wait a minute, there's this thing called the Taliban that's kind of in the way of the Al-Qaeda part.
Right.
And then if you went multiple times, you realize that, oh, wait, there's Pakistan that's getting in the way of us getting the Taliban, Taliban getting in the way of Al-Qaeda. What was your, did you notice that?
No, totally. I mean, then you got the ISIS comes out, like there's all the different flavors, I guess you could say. It's like, okay... And that's where you really got to rely on your intel department. All right, these guys are bad, and here's why. Go get them. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
But then you're like, yeah, we got training camps in Pakistan, bringing them over. They're joining who? The Taliban. I mean, and then you got the Northern Alliance. There's another one that was thrown in there. I don't know the history. I mean, I know a little bit about the history, but not the history of Afghanistan. And it is a long history ever since Alexander the Great that we know of, of just constant war there. But I totally agree with you. Like they're shooting back at us. Then we should probably take them out.
I think that's the best.
I mean, it really goes off the intel. Like, hey, we're going to your target for a reason. We're just not just picking a random house.
Right.
But it's very confusing. I'm still confused to this day.
Yeah. I was surprised. I forgot what I was watching, how accurate they portrayed it. Can't remember. It was actually a show that came out during all of that. And so I was surprised at how accurate the show was because what was the name of it? What's the show about the had about, I think, 7 seasons. It was CIA based. She's a crazy woman. She's an agent. She's a CIA case officer. But man, there was so many like parallels in that show that was before things happened.
Mm-hmm.
Like even the withdrawal out of Afghanistan is in the show And it was almost exactly the same as what just happened this past year.
Right.
You know, I was like, holy crap, man. It was pretty accurate. Hollywood sometimes nails it.
Maybe that's where they get their leadership from.
Exactly. You're listening to Can You Survive This Podcast? Thanks for tuning in. Please make sure to subscribe, rate, and share on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite shows. So moving on, I got on IG and I went live and asked, hey, what do you guys want me to ask my guests today? So we got a couple of questions from listeners. Managing fear. So the question was, how do you manage fear behind the sights and still be able to determine shoot or not shoot? That was an interesting question.
That is an interesting question. I don't think there's really any, I don't think fear is involved. I mean, like if you take a bad shot versus a good, is that what?
I'm not sure. I think they.
Yeah, I don't think there's fear, like, or maybe a fear of killing another man. I don't know. There is no fear, especially if, I mean, if that's your career choice and you've been training for, I mean, decades, there is no fear.
Right.
It's an enjoyment.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an enjoyment. Like, plain and simple, like ridding evil from this earth. And yeah, there was never any fear. I mean, there was some like, all right, that's no shoot, or that was a shoot, but never a fear. Yeah. Never a fear.
And I think that goes back to being a thinking shooter. We hear it our whole career.
Right.
So because we are trained to be thinking shooters, the fear piece isn't a part of whether to pull the trigger or not. It's a decision-making process that happens in a split second.
Right.
And then you do it, and then you move on. And it's all very quick.
Mm-hmm.
I think the other piece to, you know, that whole pulling a trigger or not to pull the trigger goes back to training.
Mm-hmm.
If we're shooting plastoids and these very human looking things all the time,
right?
Don't you agree? That's like kind of
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely then better than the circle, like the black circle.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's I think that happened while we were in. They made that switch.
Yeah.
Was the beginning of, well, I guess the wars. It's like, all right, we need to start putting the funny face targets versus the, you know, basic dot
silhouette. Yeah,
yeah, like because it wasn't working.
Right.
And then we got, you know, Bin Laden up there, and we got the real Haji Pete looking people. Yeah. that helped even more.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, yeah, it's all like, I mean, the pipeline training works for sure.
Like it
definitely does.
Yeah,
absolutely.
No, that's good stuff. Another question. Best piece of tech that you ever got to use during your career. There's some cool tech.
There is some really cool tech.
But did you have a favorite or?
I'd say your night visions, thermal. I mean, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Like, thermal's insane.
Did you work with the four tubes that much? Did you get?
No. I was out before I was punching out when the four tubes were getting introduced. I think our R&D was playing with them.
Yeah.
But it was the 14s.
Yeah.
I can't remember. 17s. I don't remember what the nomenclature was, but
right.
Yeah, just the two tubes.
Yeah.
But they were awesome. Your radios that could communicate with, you know, stuff up above, back to the base, all that stuff. So, but I wouldn't say detonators. There's some cool detonators out there.
That's right. We're going to dig into your breacher experience.
There's some cool detonators out there. Like you can do command or, you know, time delay, whatever it is, but there's definitely some good ones out there.
Yeah, cool. We'll dig into that. And then the last one that I'm going to go ahead and pick from, three military lessons learned that you now apply to your civilian life.
Three lessons learned.
Or a couple, whatever.
I'd say one is don't act like a pussy. I mean,
yeah,
God honest truth. Like, I was just talking to a guy about this. I'm like, we've got a bunch of boys wandering this earth in men's bodies, and they're afraid to try new things. They're afraid to be, they're working their butts off and afraid to be there with their family. They're afraid to try new stuff. They're afraid to go work out. They're afraid to get off their ass and go do stuff with their kids. Like, they're just afraid. They're afraid to go try something new. Like, oh, I wouldn't be good at that. How do you know? You don't try it. I guess that's the biggest thing. Cause I mean, I was like that. And then through the military, I was like, all right, just quit being a pussy. Like, you might go fail, but that's all right. You just got more knowledge and you can go to the next thing. That'd probably be my biggest one. Next one would be student always a freaking student, no matter if it's a new guy, if it's a guy that's been there forever, is be a student. We don't know everything by any means, and you never will. And that always keep your ears open, eyes open, and just listen and learn as best you possibly can, for sure. That might be number one. And then I guess another one is, what was the question again?
Three things from military over to civilian.
Network, man. Make a network. Friends with everyone. Be cool to everyone, because you might need them. They might need you, and it's just good to do, man. It's just always good to be cool to other people.
Yeah, yeah. Build your people.
Definitely a big thing. Not so much for like, oh, I could use you for business later, but be cool to people, man. Never know what they're going through. They might need somebody, especially if you're on deployment, having some hard times. And just be cool. I mean, because what's the golden rule, right? Treat others as you want to be treated.
Right, right.
It's a big thing.
Yeah. That's good stuff, man. I agree. Like, building the tribe when you get out, I think, especially that transition piece, mm-hmm. you got to have kind of like that life support system that gets you through those moments where, you know, you and I probably both have some of the similar things where you're like, oh, you know, good days, bad days, and it's good to have people around you.
Absolutely.
That you can kind of talk to.
But we don't think, it's a lot of times we're like, I'm good,
right,
I'm fine, I'm okay. Oh, yeah. No, you are not. I've been so guilty of that, man. Of that. I'm good.
Yeah, no, we're not. We're never good.
Shut up, Eddie.
I know, that's it. Yeah, self-talk, that's a good one. Yeah, right there. Like, yeah. I get up every, there's days when I get up and I go, literally say it out loud, like, just get up and go to work and go do what you need to do. Yep. Just get it done.
Hardest part is walking in these doors.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. And then once you're in, you get into that, you get into this like rhythm, and then before you know it, you've knocked out a lot of good shit for the day, even though mm-hmm. I didn't feel like it at the beginning, but self-talk.
Exactly.
Like, just go do it, dumbass. Yep. Yeah. Okay. Digging into you, which I think you mentioning Afraid is a great launch point to talk about your brand, Unafraid.
Right.
So did you just basically give us a snapshot of why you came up with Unafraid?
It kind of. Actually, that's probably going to be the next book I'm be working on. It's going to be called, hopefully, Don't Be a Pussy, or quit acting like one. Like, yeah. I'm saying it's like a mindset book.
Yeah.
I just think, I mean, as you can attest to this, the mindset, our mind is so powerful. Mm-hmm. It's insane. Especially when you talk to guys about buds or training, they think it comes down to the push-ups, the sit-ups, dealing with the cold, being tired. And dude, it's right here and it's right here. It's your heart and your mind, which is like the heart and mind logo for Unafraid. It's like, you've got to be, if you want to go do something, you got to be passionate about it. You got to be all in. And you just got to be not afraid to quit. A lot of people are afraid to try new things because, like I just mentioned earlier, they don't want to fail.
Yeah.
Failure is a part of it.
Yeah.
Failure is a part of it. Like, I'm not saying failure, we should go out. I mean, at times you should, go try to fail. Go try to fail, or go do something you've never done before. Mm-hmm. Like when we were talking before this about the whole fighting thing, like you and I talked and I like, yeah, okay, I'll go to a boxing gym. I'm freaking addicted. It started out with striking. Now I'm like going to jujitsu, and I'm going like 3 to 6 times a week. So it's just like, and I fell in love with it, and it's been awesome. My kids are doing it. My wife started boxing. So it's crazy. And I think a lot of us are just afraid to go do something, or they're just afraid to correct someone that maybe throws a piece of trash in the trash can and it falls to the ground, and hold them accountable. Hey, man, you pick up your trash. Cause they're afraid of confrontation everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, you can see it. I mean, you go anywhere. I saw a dude. So the grocery store I go to, they walk your card out for you, or you can like take it back, because I don't have like the card holders. And the dude put his cart in between the cars, which usually bangs, and I was about to freaking just start, I wouldn't get a pounce, but tactfully say, hey bro. And then I guess he had a conversation with one of the employees that he was going to get the cart and take it back, but like, hold people accountable. Like, we are so scared. It doesn't mean to go out and start a fight, but like, if you hold people accountable to certain things, they're not going to do it somewhere else. They're like, oh, I remember that one time, I'm just going to go do it. So the Unafraid brand is just like, do the right thing. Don't be afraid to fail. Don't be afraid to take the risk. And a lot of people that are listening to this right now, they're thinking of something right now. They're like, shit, I think he's talking to me. And you're right, I am. Like, it's so true, dude. Yeah. I mean, starting a company, for example. I mean, there's a lot of risk in that. You're like, okay, I'm putting all my freaking eggs into this basket. It might work out, it might not work out, but I'm going to freaking give it all. I was talking to, I do these one-on-one conversations through the phone, through Unafraid, where we can schedule a call and we'll Zoom. And he wants to go to Butts. And he's been talking about it for like 3 years, or he's been wanting to do it for 3 years. And I was like, hey, man, it's like you got to go all in. You can't just like 1 foot in, 1 foot out. It doesn't work that way. And he gets deterred by a negative comment by one person.
Yeah.
I'm like, bro, you've got to know yourself. No one knows you like you. No one knows you like you. So if you know you can do that, that's your passion and that's your purpose.
Yeah.
You freaking drive on. I don't care what obstacle. And I'm like, you just need to worry about step one. You don't need to work about, oh, I can't wait till I'm hopping with, you know, team four or whatever it is. Bro, you need to go to boot camp first. You know what I mean? And they just get overwhelmed, especially in this generation. I'm sure you see it too. It's just like, I mean, the man is dying. It is dying. We're just, they don't have like the event that like you need, that adventure to man up, and we're just not getting it because of stuff like this, the computer, the iPad. I know like my son, I've got to rip the iPad from him. He'll stay on that thing all the time. And he gets like this false sense of adventure of playing like Minecraft or something. I'm like, dude, get your ass outside and go kill a raccoon or something.
Do something.
Something. Yeah. Anything. Yeah. So that's where it kind of like goes off of. It's like, and it's just stand up for what it is that you believe in. And, you know, so hopefully we get, I'm kind of working on a mentorship program, individuals, probably do hopefully do some speaking stuff. So that's kind of where Unafraid's going. I'm real passionate about it, like extremely passionate about it. I think guys need to kick in the ass.
I think
just like you and I did.
Right. And I agree with you. I think one, going back to passion, I've said it before, and it's something my dad said a long time ago. He's like, hey, you find what you're passionate about. And if you're passionate about something, you'll be good at it. And if you're good at it, then the money will follow, because a lot of people get focused on money.
Yeah.
Well, you can't have money as the first thing.
It can't be your motivator.
Right. It can't be the energy. It can't be the fuel. It has to be something else. So you got to find the passion. Then you'll be good at it. And then the money will follow no matter what you decide to do in life. But you've got to find it and then go after it. I agree with that, man. And then holding people accountable, I think that's great. I mean, you're politely holding people, you know, in a way that you find it probably a little embarrassing, right?
And of
then,
course,
but that little bit of shame then makes them probably do it right over and over.
And there's
again.
Definitely a tactful way to do it, even though inside your brain you just want to smash the car on the guy's head. We're a generation, a world full, like, we're afraid of confrontation. Confrontation doesn't need to be a negative thing. It doesn't need to be like, oh, I want to fight you. That has nothing to do with it. It's just, we're so used to, oh, my feelings, this and that. No, screw that. Like, you know what's right. Do the right thing.
I think it's easy for us team guys, because we hold each other accountable all the time. You know, if someone fucks up, you call them on it, and then they're like, I know.
And they're like, messed up.
Yeah,
and then we're moving on. It's not like I'm not talking to you for 2 weeks.
Right.
We're like, hey, dude, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. I'm with you. And then the last piece I like you said is like signing the dotted line. Like, I remember looking it up, and it's total of people who have served their country, it's 6% of our population total have served, right? So that's 94% of the country who chose not to sign the dotted line.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 94% of the people who decided to serve themselves than to serve their country, which is okay.
Right.
Because it's, you know, the 6% is fine going and providing the 94% that ability to be selfish and look out for themselves. Rather than look out for the greater good. And I feel like you kind of hit it, right? Because we have so many guys and gals alike these days that joining the military is like probably last on the list, if it's even on the list.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's usually like, oh, I need to get some college, or which everyone has their reasons.
Yeah.
But I mean, like I tell everyone that I talk to is like your main purpose, which I believe no matter what you're doing in the military, is to keep the machine going, to provide security and safety for the humans, our citizens that are living back here in the United States of America. Like, that's what it's for, is for your neighbors, for your mom, for your dad, your siblings. I mean, it's for them, like, to keep bad guys from coming in.
That's right.
Yeah, and
it's fucking badass too, by the way.
It's true. Yeah,
it's a
true
good deal.
It's a great deal.
So there you go. You know, you can choose to serve yourself.
Or everyone go enlist.
Yeah, there you go. Or you can just be selfish. It's okay. Capitalism gives you the right to be selfish.
That's
okay.
That's so funny.
Moving out of there. So now you, let's dig into your little bit of the past. You went into the Marines.
I did.
You found out that, hey, I'd rather the military bearing aspect of the Marine Corps is a little more than what you wanted, because I think that's, it's a cool conversation piece, because people assume SEALs are like these military bearing oriented dudes, like, you know, the haircuts and the, in the uniform, and we're making sure everything is squared away. When the reality is we could care less about all of that. Where we care is operationally being time on target, doing it and annihilating
the job,
and then leaving
the job,
and everything else. Who gives a shit? Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, so you already mentioned it earlier. That was like you jump boat from the Marine Corps. But what did you do in the Marines?
Well, I was infantry.
Yeah.
Which I wanted to do. I just thought like, oh, I'll be infantry. Oh, if there's ever a fight, I'll be the first one to go. Not knowing anything. I was 17 when I enlisted. When I went to boot camp, I was 17. I loved it. Great discipline. It was awesome. My heart is with the Marines for sure. Like, I learned so much. I was mature when I went over the Navy, and I really believe that helped me tremendously. But I tried out for Marine Sniper School in Quantico, and you have to have a expert shot. I missed it by 1.3 times.
Yeah.
So I think my career may have been different if I would have gone to sniper school. But this kind of goes to, all right, go ahead and fail. Like I'm telling you right now, like, nobody fails a rifle qual, doesn't get into a school, and then goes to another service for the creme de la creme. Like, it just doesn't happen. This dumbass did. So I'm just saying, like, but I knew in my head, like, that was my passion since I was a kid. The only reason why I went to the Marines is I had a buddy that I swam with in high school. He graduated a year before me. I went to his graduation down at Paris Island. I saw the obstacle course, the pugil sticks, the boxing, the marching, and I fell in love. I was like, okay, boom, I'm doing this. And like, if, like, I'm not, maybe recon's it. Maybe it's not the SEAL. I'll just go do the recon, right?
Yeah.
Recruiters are very persuasive. So I did that, did my four, and it just wasn't what I wanted. And then the sniper thing happened. It's like, all right, cool. I'm just going to go back to Cincinnati and be a cop. I'm going to get a job at Enterprise because they have a awesome corporate structure. No, they...
what movie is that?
Step Brothers. So I was like, I'll just go back to Cincinnati and be a cop. And it's just like something... And I was like, okay with that for a couple months. I'm like, no. Like, that's not who I am. That's not what I wanted. That's not what I've dreamed of. And I went and talked to the Navy recruiter, went over, and then got into Buds.
Nice.
And then made that change over.
So you were in Bud's class?
237.
237.
Which was 2001? 2000 or 2001. I can't remember exactly.
So you were 9/11.
9/11, I was in second phase.
Wow.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's when you probably knew, boy, we're going to be operating a lot.
Well, I was like, they're totally going to push us through this training. Everything's 2 weeks now.
They're just going to give us our training.
I thought about that. It didn't happen.
Yeah, that's probably good.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that would have set a trend that neither one of us wants to happen.
Pretty much.
I mean, people die. Like, we just recently had a guy die in Buds.
That's right. That? Yeah, I did see that.
Do we know how?
Yeah. I don't know. What's the
after Hell Week? Like, he,
it's always the, what is it when you get the fluid in the lungs? Pulmonary edema?
Yeah,
edema,
it's basically
like
pneumonia of some sort.
That's what I usually hear, with past deaths, the flu, because you really can't detect it, I don't think.
Right.
The fluid builds up in the lungs and they,
over time, and then
they drown.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure. I don't know what happened, but I did see it.
Yeah. And I think that just proves that, you know, Buds is no joke.
It's no joke. Yeah.
You know, people die.
There's two dudes. One dude died and one dude was in the hospital.
I think he had like a broken back.
Wow.
He made it, finished Hell Week, and then basically whatever, ended up at the hospital. And I think the one guy had a broken back. And the other guy, there's nothing out, but I know that, like, whenever the last guy that died was like 5 or 6 years ago, maybe longer, and he had an enlarged heart, and which is normal for athletes, and just had one of those kind of myocardial, you know, like basically a heart attack. But nothing unusual. It's kind of like what you hear about with the professional athlete, the football player, the basketball player walks out onto the court and just collapses and dies.
Right, right.
It's the same type of thing, I think, that's going
on. Was it separate incidences, or were they somehow?
I'm not sure, but
one hell of a hell week.
Yeah. I know. The other guys get to say, hey, we survived in my hell week.
That's horrible to say, but that's...
Yeah, well...
Well, you know what I want to say.
Guys will be saying it anyway.
They'll be rubbing that in.
Yeah, yeah. Guy died in my hell week.
That's how tough we were.
Fucking hardcore. All right. So then you get into the teams, and then you ended up at on the East Coast?
Team two. Yep.
Team two.
Team two,
that's
baby.
That's like the team one of the East Coast, which for those of you who don't know, like team one is it was called like Stalingrad or Stalin One or something.
So SEAL sure.
Team One. It was Stalin Team One because they were actually big on
that's
military
funny.
Bearing and all kinds
back
of
back in
stuff.
The day. I think yeah. they both were.
Yeah. So Team Two yeah. had a reputation of that very hardcore, disciplined group.
Right.
Of guys,
yes,
right?
they did.
Meanwhile, I was at Team Three, which was kind of middle ground, and Team Five was like more of, hey, let's go surfing.
Right.
You know, flip flops and have fun and party and. Was more of the laid back team.
As long as you do your job.
That's right.
As long as you can do your job.
Yeah. And so now what your experience at Team Two, was it what you thought it was going to be?
It was cool. The people are, I mean, I was kind of like nervous, obviously, being the new guy, but dudes were cool. I mean, there was a little bit of like, hey, new guy. I mean, what you'd expect, but no, it was awesome, man. What I thought the op tempo would be a little different, to be honest with you. And it, especially with what was going on, but it really wasn't.
Yeah.
I thought it would be more high speed than it was. And the only reason why I can say that now is being going to, you know, development group and then kind of comparing the two. But yeah. I mean, dude, it was awesome. Like learned so much. The people that I got to work with, freaking awesome. And my troop chief and my troop commander, or excuse me, troop chief and my platoon chief were both ex-Damnet guys that came over.
Oh, awesome.
So I like yeah. this is awesome.
That's
so it was like
to...
CQC all the time.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
this is great. So I was ready for green team. Really.
Yeah.
I was ready to go.
No, it's good to have mentors
oh,
like
heck
that.
Yeah, man.
My biggest mentor when I first showed up was Master Chief. Well, he was a senior chief at the time. Senior Chief Mike Martin. He was tattooed from, you know, the back of his ear all the way down literally to his big toe. And he owned a tattoo shop in IB. He was a Vietnam guy. And I mean, it was the Vietnam guys that held that rogue maverick
mm-hmm.
fuck you mentality
right.
for the SEAL teams. Why we don't do what all the other special operations guys do.
Right.
It was set by Vietnam guys. And so those were my mentors and
experience.
And then we saw with like the Eddie Gallagher story
mm-hmm.
where that shift, like Eddie Gallagher is an old school mentality guy.
Right.
And then he found himself surrounded by a whole bunch of like these, whatever, the newer version, whatever's going on in the SEAL teams. I don't know.
The politically correct kind.
Right.
Yeah.
Or something. And, you know, and then he found himself, you know, in fucking prison or whatever. That's a whole other story. But I'm just kind of highlighting that there is the old school mentality versus now I think what's going on is like this new school thing. And do you feel like the teams started to change
yes.
as you got out?
I mean, yeah, I know when I was getting out, it started to get more political. I mean, as the wars were going on, Afghanistan, Iraq were kicking off and then sporadic stuff around the globe, it was work-based.
Yeah.
Like, operation, what do you need? I don't care what you're wearing. Just do your job. Be here, ready to go. Got your gun.
Right.
Let's go. And then that started kind of as we were pulling out and op tempo slowed down, and we're taking on a new role, trying to get the Afghanis, Iraqis to do their own stuff in their country, which they should.
Yeah.
It got more political. And then like, where's your colored shirt? Why haven't you shaved?
Yeah.
It, like dumb shit. Like, what does that mean? What does that matter?
Oh, yeah.
What does that matter? Like, we're in our own little world here. Like, we're doing our job, and it's just, and I get presentation and military bear and all that crap. I get that, but that's not the way it was. Just there is that shift for sure when the political kind of comes in, and I didn't like that. I was getting out like right at that time.
Yeah, yeah,
for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah,
and like I talked to guys that are still there. They're like, dude, you got out at the perfect time because the wars were dying. Like it was dying.
Yeah.
Like it's not. They were still doing some cool stuff, but it wasn't. The op tempo wasn't the same.
Right.
I mean, you knew you on deployment. You're going to this country or that country, and you're getting it on. That
yeah.
was it.
Yeah.
And it's DAs. Everyone loves direct action.
Right.
It's like the Hollywood op, right?
yeah. Yeah. Who said it best? Olson or one of our admirals said, you know, what used to be the operation of a decade became an operation every night.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because that was never.
Because back in the day, you'd.
Surveillance.
Some guy got
yeah.
to go, you know, one group of guys
yep.
in the entire SEAL community got to do something cool
yep.
every now and then.
Yep.
And then before you know it, all SEALs are
boom,
doing
boom,
cool
boom,
shit
boom,
every
boom.
Night.
Everyone's yeah. a combat veteran.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. Everybody's
absolutely.
Getting in.
Which is great. Like,
yeah.
which is awesome.
Yeah. It's one of the very few careers where the pinnacle of our career is war.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, most people don't realize that, but like, yeah, we want to go to war.
Yeah.
We want conflict.
That's what we. That's what we signed up for. And like,
yeah,
totally.
Or the other 94% are wanting peace.
Exactly. No, we're like, let's go. Let's cleanse this place. Yeah,
because the last thing you want to do is do this. Like, we guys before us train for literally decades, do an entire career and never get to pull the trigger.
You got to have a regular season, right? It's like a football player. Like, we're just doing practice, summer camp all year round. No, Get us to the big game, man.
Yeah. And I'm very quick to attest that the squadrons, you guys were like fucking just ripping it up, annihilating. I remember hearing such great stuff going on. Whereas I was in a different place doing different things that, different. It was just different.
Smart guy stuff. You know, the smart guy stuff.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know about that. Because a lot of times I was like, God, why didn't I just stick with that path? And, anyway,
in that way, it always is. Yeah, it is. What if I would have? Yeah, what about this over here?
It always, But hey, it is. It
Frickin'
gives us
life.
Gives us all these different experiences. It does. Leverage. It does.
Absolutely.
About, and now we can be old people.
Yep.
Yeah. There I was.
There I was.
Yeah, that's right.
Scratch my back.
Yeah. Exactly. Can you get that real quick?
We will be right back after the break.
Okay, so now let's get into you went to a tier one command, and correct me if I'm wrong. It's good to talk about this stuff. The tier one aspect, and I know you're kind of sort of hesitant now. Do you find yourself hesitant to talk about it because the command seems to have this invisible leash on us that we feel like, God, I don't want to do it, but I do it. But it's kind of this.
It's weird, right? I wouldn't say with just certain things. I mean, it's not like you can't Google anything and find out everything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know.
Yeah. I have people that bring it up because as you, I'm sure happens to you,
right.
People like to do an intro leveraging the command because it's very click-worthy, right? That title.
It also gets you business.
I would say that too. You know, you got the tier one piece, helps in a lot of different ways, but it does get exploited.
And I think
that exploitation piece is what drives people that are currently there nuts. Would you agree? Or what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I know like when I like, we kind of briefly touched on this when I was there and guys are doing whatever, you know, in civilian land, I was like, man, what are they doing? Just keep your mouth shut, quiet professionals. And I still believe in that too, as long as you're not discussing ops that are currently taking place.
Yeah.
But when you get out civilian world, you kind of like, okay, what do I do? It's my resume, man.
Right.
It's my resume. It's like, if I'm going to apply to a job, I'm not going to leave that out because it's secretive. I'm like, I was here. I'm like, what is this? And I'll explain it to them.
Yeah.
It's my resume. Absolutely. But I'm not going to go and talk about this is how we do this. This is how we do this. And if it's broad and known, then that's not a big deal. But
It's
classification of certain things or classification.
Right.
And that's the way it's got to be. I mean, we just got back the book and from DOD and the only thing they changed was the command's name.
Of course, even though it was unclassified, probably.
It was unclassified. So we took the name that was allowed to be used by other operators.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We used that. Like, we did our homework. We didn't just like, oh, here, SEAL team, you know, the number. Yeah. and we did what we were supposed to do. And they're like, we can't do that. You need to call it the unit. So it's now called the unit in my book. That's what that was. That was like the biggest thing.
Not the command? Because the unit usually applies to our brothers down.
The command, I think they might have used the command and they also the unit. They called it the unit.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's new.
It is. Yeah, so it's very new.
We've always said the command.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, like for short.
That's what they wanted.
Yeah, the unit.
I was like, all right, cool.
Yeah, that definitely will confuse.
And they took nothing out. Like I threw in stuff in there that I thought they would take out. They didn't take out anything. I was like, all right.
Yeah,
right,
with mine, it was very subjective. And I know who it was. He's an 06. That has been retired forever, sitting in a closet, is who reads our manuscripts.
I think he's gone.
Oh, okay.
That's why it took forever, because it was before the Afghanistan debacle. He punched out to go somewhere else, and they got someone new in there, I was told.
Oh, okay.
So, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, he redacted the, I mean.
Everything but the title?
Yeah. We're like 100 pages of stuff, you know.
Wow.
And I was like, I mean, it almost prevented it from being published.
I was so scared of that, dude.
Yeah.
It
came really close. And then we just had to do a big rewrite and fix it. And then we left most of the redactions, you know, like the blackout, mm-hmm. we just left it in there. And if you read the before and the after, you can kind of sort of figure out what the hell mm-hmm. I was talking about. But everything I was talking about was subjective. It wasn't even operational. My book wasn't about operations. I would have to set the theme, set the setting, set the table for you
mm-hmm.
so that I could get to the funny stuff.
Right.
But it wasn't about me telling you about mm-hmm. an op. It was about me just telling you this place and the environment mm-hmm. and the fucked up situation right, we're in right. so that I could then get to the
I don't know how they like, oh, you can't use this. You can't. I mean, yeah. if you're like getting into people's names that are still in, I totally get
right,
that.
Right,
like,
right.
Or classified gear or whatever it is. Yeah. I totally understand that. But some of the stuff is like, dude, the war's over, bro.
Right.
Like, well, we're never going to talk about Vietnam.
Yeah.
Like, how are you supposed to learn and teach other people? Like, are you kidding yeah. me?
Or recruiting, like me and you learned from books that were on shelves.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And everybody was like, yeah, this solidifies the fact that I'm going to go be a fucking ninja.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or like a movie. Yeah. Like, yeah, yeah, I'm just now signing this dotted line right now. I'm going to be a part of that 6%.
Yeah, exactly. yeah, I always like to talk about that with
guys who've been there. I see both sides. Yeah. I really do see both sides. But I think that there's a safe zone for that.
Yeah, I purposely.
You just not going to talk about your life for the last however many years you're in?
You can't talk skip about that? Seven. You spent, I think, the same amount of time there, 7-8 years, right?
Yeah.
We both checked the same amount of time there, and it's like, how do you just skip it? You can't.
That was a water purifier. It's just delivered Ozark water or whatever it's called.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Okay. That's the drama there. That's always leads to drama in that world. Okay. We got that. What else we got for you? Okay, so now contingent group.
Yeah.
Let's talk about, you know, you and I have some similarities.
We have a lot of similarities.
Yeah, I have Escape the Wolf providing corporate, mostly just crisis management, active shooter programs, natural disasters, cyber threat awareness. And you have contingent group. What's your big, like, what's probably the one thing you do the most? I've even referred people to you.
Yes, because
I'm
have.
Like, I don't do that.
It really comes down to, look, as you know, every client has a different need, has a different threat based off region, what their assets they're protecting, moving, whatever they're doing.
Yeah.
So we kind of customize what they need. And usually what that is like, okay, what do you got going on? Okay, cool. And then I go through the file cabinet and be like, all right, Clint, I need you for this, or I need someone for this, or I need a Russian speaker for this. So you just kind of customize the security safety solution for them and then plug it in. So, I mean, really the way I look at it is my job is I'm like the builder.
Yeah.
I have all these contractors that kind of make the big product and I just make sure things are flowing. And some stuff I jump in, I have expertise in certain things. But a lot of times I'm going to my trusted crew and they're doing like the tech side, for example. I don't know anything about tech. I go to guys that have done that, worked with us. That was their forte. But like I'll do shooting stuff. I'll do just like your basic situation awareness. Check out your home office or whatever building. Kind of see how you're moving clients or assets and then kind of red sell it. All right. If I was the bad guy, how am I getting your product or whatever it may be? And then just fill in the gaps.
What are the majority of your clients? Are they corporate high net worth?
Corporate, but a little bit, probably even on that. High net worth and corporate, mostly international stuff. Mm-hmm. So guys that are, a lot of expats that are going down, do whatever they got to do or go across the Atlantic and just keep them safe.
And so how would people interested in hiring you? You got a website?
Yeah, contingentgroup.com. Just go down there. There's like a submission form, like what are you interested or what do you think you need? And a lot of people don't know, which is understandable, especially in this world. I've got this problem. I have no clue what I need, which is why they reach out to, obviously, guys like us. And then we just call them, talk it out, give them the options. And if we can't do it, which we've never had that, I'll refer them to someone that can.
Yeah. I'm the same way. And is there something that, what's the top two or three things that you've been kind of work-wise, the requests you've been getting lately? Anything specific?
Lately, a lot of emergency management, like beefing up the house for high net worth, making sure they got they're prepared. A lot of your stuff.
Yeah.
But a lot of them already have a lot of the stuff. Like they're like the good guys. Like, right. I'm coming to your house, buddy. So I'd say that's a big one. I'd say probably getting people from point A to point B safely, where to stay, monitor them, you know, keeping track of what's going on economically, socially, with wherever they are. That's probably the biggest thing.
Yeah.
Just are making sure they're good, man.
Are you still going overseas a lot or out of country, should I say?
Not as much. I try to give it up to the boys as much as possible. Yeah, yeah. I just, if I need to go down there, I'll show up to show my face and make sure things are good. Kind of manage if I need to, but usually the guys they're good to go.
Yeah.
They kind of do it. Some clients I prefer to be with.
Yeah.
Cause you know, it is, you get close to them. Yeah. You're like, I want you. I'm like, okay, I'm coming.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember those days. I slowly started pulling away from it and got more into more of the product side of crisis management, you know, providing the company with, you know, for example, Dillard's, you know, 45,000 employee handbooks. Right. And then distributing them to 330 stores.
That's,
you know,
a task.
It was a task.
That's a task.
But it's like my stuff's more tangible now, where I kind of the consulting side, you know, I step back from, mainly because, you know, I just kind of I didn't necessarily get bored, but I decided I liked the product side just more. You know what I mean?
I like, what's that one thing you put out with the booklets that you have? They're all like color coordinated.
Yeah.
What? Nothing's sweet.
Yeah. They're like crisis. I tell you, it's like they're blood proof crisis management flip charts.
That's good. It was well done.
Oh, thanks.
Well done.
Yeah. I take that as a big compliment from someone in the same industry. All right. Let's dig into the fun stuff. The most dangerous situation that in a career, you have several.
I was about to say in a fight with my wife.
Yeah, we have several depending on the era, right? But when you were in, what was, you know, was it a training thing? Was it a real world thing? What was the most where you're like, holy shit, this is it?
It was definitely the deployment where we lost Louis Zafran, for sure. Because we lost two dudes a week before we lost Louis. So it was like, whoa, okay, what's going on? Like,
was that an avalanche type
deal?
Or
no, I mean, it was too late for an avalanche. It would have been. One of them was an avalanche, I think. But no, they
weren't. For our listeners, what's avalanche? It's like a call, right?
It's like, get the heck out.
Means the building's going to fall.
But the building did fall on Louis, so there was no call until, I mean, you just couldn't do anything. And then we had so many dudes strung across, like all jacked up, so we couldn't leave them. But that was like, holy shit, because I was on Louis' shoulder. This is in the book as well. And there was something in me, man. It's just like, it never happened. Like, I think I've told you before, I always tell people, as I have Tom's disease, terrified of missing shit. Like, I love to be the first guy in the door. Yeah. I love to know what's going on.
Yeah, I'm like every team guy.
Yeah. Like, dudes are at the bar, I'm staying with you, bro. Like, a fight might happen, or I don't want you to be alone. Like, I'm not missing anything.
Yeah.
But there's something, there was just something. It was so loud. It's like, get away. And I looked, and there was, you know, you don't want to get bunched up because if a grenade comes out, you know, more casualties. So for the first time, I was like, hey dude, I'm gonna go back behind the wall. And I was like, I love you, bro. And just like, you know, we do casually, I walked behind the wall. As soon as I did, freaking boom, exploded. And freaking the building exploded.
Just to clarify,
and he was by a pylon, and the pylon was holding up a stanchion, was holding up this huge overhang. I mean, like probably 2 to 3 feet thick concrete just slid and just crushed him, man. I mean, crushed him. And I was right there. Like, so that was like, holy shit. And the thing that was the worst about that was I was the one that told him to go there in the first place. So like the survival's guilt, that's probably out of all the good guys that we had. Like, I mean, that definitely hits home the most.
Yeah.
I'm very intimate with that night.
I bet.
Like big time.
And for listeners, paint the picture. You're a breacher.
Yes.
He's an EOD guy.
Yes.
And I don't think people realize EOD work closely.
Yes. Extremely.
With us.
They're studs.
Along with PJs and combat controllers, right? So that operators can do their job. We bring in these other experts to really just make us better.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So you
like
guys,
everyone's got their own little trait. Like they're good. Yeah. Like breachers, snipers, freaking EOD, PJ for medical stuff, your CCT to call for fire, deal with all the aircraft above head. Yeah, EOD, like especially Navy guys, they're freaking studs.
They are,
man.
The best.
They are because they deal with the nuclear, biological, chemical. Right. They do all of it.
They're badasses.
They're badass.
And so you're the breacher. You guys are going to the door together.
So I was actually on secondary entry. So we weren't primary entry for that one. So I was kind of back. And it was just turning into a debacle because we were getting him out because we were on Suicide Vest Network. One blew up just a couple of nights before when Mike and Nate passed. And so we were very hesitant because they showed themselves. The one dude the couple of nights before clacked himself off with all his kids right there. So killed his whole family. So which is weird to watch. It's like, dude, you just killed kids, like your kids.
Yeah, what the hell?
They're running to daddy and you just blew them all up. Like it's freaking insane, man.
Yeah.
And so we were very hesitant about that, very cautious, still doing our job. And then there was like a kind of a traffic jam in the doorway. So I was like, hey, Louie, pop up. Because he would search, making sure there was nothing on there. So he popped up kind of probably 10 yards away from the front door. And trying to get the women and kid out so we could clear the house or at least send the dog in, and the dog wouldn't chew up any kids. And so as soon as he went up there, it was got worse. So I was like, crap, he needs help. So I went up to do assist him mm-hmm. with his job. And then it got too crazy. I think one guy got dropped in the doorway. And I was like, all right, there's too much going on here. There was commotion. I heard one of our guys like, something's going on over here. And I was like, all right, I'm going to pull back. Because there were so many guns up there. I wouldn't have been able to do much. So I pulled back. As soon as I did, boom. Damn. Houseborn IED blew up. Freaking boom. And I think Benny, the dog guy, I think you know him. He got double femur fracture.
Yeah.
Dude's got knees blown out, broken back, I think.
It was a medevac nightmare, right?
It was a medevac nightmare. We had to medevac a lot of dudes. PJs had to use that pneumatic lift kit to get the slab of concrete off Louie because you couldn't lift it. Yeah. Like you had to get this. I was like, that night I was like, okay, PJs are the coolest. I'm getting chills talking about this.
Right, right.
PJs are the shit, dude. Like they are impressive, man. They are so impressive.
Yeah.
So impressive. I knew they were awesome before, but like just seeing them in action, which you never want to see them in action. I never want to see them in action. Cause you know, someone's down.
Yeah.
But dude, wow. Like just badass guys, man. Very well trained, very cool, calm and collective, and just did their job.
Yeah.
Cause those are their boys too.
Right. Know? Right. It's all one big team.
Yep. It is.
Yeah, I agree. I went through 18 Delta. And so of course you go through paramedic school with PJs, and then I think they can come to the long course now. I don't know. Back then,
they do their own? Because what?
Yeah, they kind of had
courses a year or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which is, I mean, they are PJs are trauma experts,
right?
And 18 Deltas, we are trauma plus disease. Mm-hmm. So they give us the skills to look under a microscope and determine the difference between, you know, brucellosis and, you know, malaria. Mm-hmm. You know, it's crazy the amount of education you get there. But
yeah,
it's one of the best, I mean, pathways and schools that, you know, I went through personally. So PJs, though, they take trauma and they max it out the mm-hmm. same way that we would max out like the disease process piece,
right.
You know, taking care of our guys overseas, no matter where we're at.
I went down to when I was a team two, we got it set up to go down there for a couple weeks to do like the pig lab. We have the cadavers.
Yeah.
Dude, it was awesome.
Yeah.
Adam Brown did a blood transfusion, passed out. It was freaking phenomenal. Of course it'd be him. Of course it'd be him.
Yeah.
Now it was like, I was like, dude, this is some, cause we had the goats.
Yeah.
Yeah. My goat was 0880 and 0884. I'll never forget the little tag on their ears.
Yeah.
Little guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a cool course, man.
It is, man.
And we only did a couple 18 weeks.
Delta, you're raising them, right?
Right.
You're taking care of these goats. They are part of your class. And then you're leveraging them for some of the best training in the world.
Yeah, you know? I was impressed.
Phenomenal. Along with kitty cats. I remember the first time we had these cats and I was like, what the fuck are we doing with cats? And that was so that we could learn how to intubate, put IVs in infants.
No kidding.
Tell me if that ain't crazy, right?
Dang,
you're using
dude.
cats
huh?
Kitty cat, like those cats' airways are so tiny.
Wow.
And so you're practicing intubations and you're trying to get a vein on a cat.
Yeah, you know, how that works
is no different than trying to get a vein on an infant. It's,
right.
Yeah, it's a challenge. I mean, obviously, if you know anatomy, you can figure out where to throw a dart. But that's the key, is really paying attention to the anatomy, no matter whether you're dealing with a baby or an obese person. Anybody in the medical world knows, like someone who's got serious obesity, trying to get a vein on them is it's fucking nightmare sometimes. Mm-hmm. You got to just stab in the right spot and look for the flash.
Hope.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, dangerous situation. That's definitely a dangerous situation.
That was probably where I felt like my butthole puckered up. I was like, oh yeah. Boy. Okay. Yeah.
You're listening to Can You Survive This Podcast? Thanks for tuning in. Please make sure to subscribe, rate, and share on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite shows.
What about helicopters versus fixed wing?
Yeah. Helicopter. I had a couple stall in mid-flight and at the nighttime in Afghanistan, which is definitely scary. It's like, okay, now we're going to die in this.
Right.
But
I always meant bring up the whistling shit cans of death.
Yeah.
Right? That's helicopter.
There's 46, dude.
Yeah. Dude, right.
Did you just die?
Yeah, you know where I
was. This is Spec Ops bird, man. What are these techs doing?
What is going on?
Freaking mechanics.
Yeah, we had one. It was a training gig, and it was a 47. And
I'm sorry, 47. That's what
yeah,
I
yeah, 47. And it was the Chocolate Mountains in Nevada, right? And it was at Fallon. I forgot what the hell we were doing out there, and we were flying to come back one night, and the pilots couldn't get over the mountain range because of the winds. So it would come up, and I mean, you're looking down. You can see the top of a mountain. You know the deal.
Yeah, five feet away.
And it's like, and it was pushing into the wind and would not get over the mountain. So he would turn left, bank right. And of course, the winds would catch those props and push you down. It was like the craziest roller coaster. Yeah.
Dude.
And then he would try again and try again. And we're over comms going, are we at the lowest point? I mean, what are you doing? Are you aiming for the highest?
Are you a pilot?
And anyway, we finally got over that night. But you're thinking about, well, if we run out of gas,
we're going to use the wheels and just kind of off-road this over the mountaintop real quick.
Yeah. Yeah. We were debating. It was like, okay, we're just going to camp. He's going to land and we're going to camp out and wait for the winds to die down. It's like, it was insane. But it was those moments on helicopters when you think, oh,
I'd probably support that decision.
Now we're going to die.
Yeah. We'll just go to sleep. It's fine.
I just land, camp out. It's us.
I've got food.
That's right. All right. So last piece here, mindset. You know, it's kind of how we started out. There was a couple of questions from the audience, but where's your mindset and the lessons learned from a career in combat? Now here you are in the civilian world and you've got Unafraid. How would you tell the new guy their mindset should be? What would you say to them these days?
I would say that you always want to have a positive outlook on things, because if you go the other side, the negative, it's going to bring you down in your performance, everything. And I mean, mindset goes, I'll tell you how crazy I get with this.
Yeah.
Like if you can just look, I got my bands on, I've got an armor of a tattoo armor. I got my Unafraid. I got my Unafraid. Like all those to me are accountabilities. Like if I'm ever like, man, this just sucks, and like, I'll go grab something or I'll pick something up to drink, I'm like, that's right, my mindset. Freaking stop being a bitch. And I have, like, we just start the self-talks.
Yeah.
I'll have the talks to myself all the time. Like, okay, dude, stop. You know better than this. Because, I mean, we're all human.
Yeah.
We're all human. And we all like to go to that negative side. I was reading a book where the study said that human minds will, like, 86% go to the negative side. Like, we'll worry about certain things. And out of that, 17% may come true. Out of the 17% that comes true, maybe like 3 or 4% is actually as bad as we thought it would be. So it never, like, anytime you like worry about something, man, I hope I get a job or I hope I can do whatever. It never works out that way.
Yeah.
It never works out. Like, and you can go back to when you started your company, you probably had a vision, right? And now here you are doing a podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you ever think that?
No.
No. So it's just like,
pivoting.
Okay.
Pivot.
And just keep your mindset focused on what your goal is and just keep driving on. There's going to be setback. There's going to be obstacles, but you need to have that in your mind. Like, hey, this is an obstacle and I'm going to freaking bash it down instead of like cowering down and being a little turd. And you do that and it feeds to your family. Like, oh my God, I love it. Like,
right.
I'm going to be motivated about this. I'm going to be more positive about this. I'm not saying that I'm motivated all the time or that I'm positive all the time. Like, there's some stuff that brings me down, but at the end of the day, I'm like, wait a second. No, this ain't right. I need to reframe my mind to put on this. If that means I need to read some good stuff or read some motivational stuff, then I'll do that. Or go through my motivational quotes on Instagram or something like, or just watch some dude get his face punched, which motivates the heck out of me. Like, yeah, I try, I gotta train hard. You know what I mean? And then like who I surround myself with, if I go to the jiu-jitsu gym or I go, you know, do some Muay Thai, I'm surrounded by like-minded individuals that are trying to get better, and you get that self-confidence, which is building my mindset. So I do things like I lift weights.
Yeah.
I do the fighting stuff. I read, I freaking exercise my mind. I try to do the right things. I don't always do the right things because I'm human. I fail a lot, but just pick it up and keep going. So that mindset is like all encompassing, everything I do, what I eat. Because what happens when we eat a bunch of donuts or some shit?
I love donuts.
I love donuts too. But you feel like crap. You feel like crap. Yeah. You're like, I don't want to do this. Like your mindset gets shot.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not going to tell you that I'm probably not going to get a donut on the way out here, but just like by talking about it. But like all that matters, like your sleep, your diet, your exercise, the way you talk to people, the way, because that's how they're going to talk to you, gives you a better mindset. All of it kind of compiles. It's like security, right?
Yeah.
There's not a one cure all. It's not like, hey, Clint, lock the door. You'll be good. No one's going to come in here. No, you need to lock the door. You need to make sure there's exterior lights. You need to have an alarm system. And if somebody comes in, you got your gun for last line of defense, or a dog, right?
Yeah.
It's the same thing. There's like all these layers of protection that you need to have. Your mindset is no different.
Mm-hmm.
You got to have this. You got to have this. You got to have this to make you a better person. So, and a lot of that stemmed when I was in the Marine Corps. I was like, holy crap, my mind is like so powerful. And then when I came over to Buds, it was like, oh shit, like I can do this. My body can do. Yeah. It was like confirmation. And then you're hanging out with other dudes that are just doing amazing things. Like we got guys that are climbing the seven summits.
Yeah.
Like where's their mindset? Like they're not thinking, I hope we make it. No, they're like, we're going to do this.
Yeah.
How much food you got? Cool. Let's go.
Yeah. Let's
like,
knock this out.
It's just like, you can see it all through our industry. It's ridiculous. And it's like, it's motivating. And then you go out of our industry, out of our little community, and you don't see it as much. You can still see it in little pieces, but you don't see it as much. And you're like, dude, you're missing your potential.
Right.
Like you are missing your freaking potential. And just can't isn't a word, right?
That's right.
We just do. You try. It doesn't mean you're gonna accomplish everything in your first try, but you just keep going.
Yeah.
So that mindset's huge, man. I'm a freaking huge fan. I can't stop feeding my brain the mindset stuff and just try to like help others. I love seeing dudes realize their potential and just go kick some serious ass. Like it is the coolest thing I think I've ever seen in my life. And I've always been a me guy. What can benefit Eddie? I want to go do this training. But they're like, dude, just putting that power into someone else is like the coolest thing. I'm like, boom, baby. Now go tell five friends. Go help them.
Right. No.
So it's cool, man. I mean, it's like you gotta be amped for it, dude. I mean, because you know exactly. I mean, we've all had those days where you're just like not feeling it, but then you get picked up because you saw a 2-minute YouTube clip of a motivational speaker, or you watch Rocky, right?
Yeah.
You're like, dude, I'm gonna go to the boxing gym.
Right.
Like little things you can do things to amp you up.
Yeah.
You know, like your music that goes off in the first morning, freaking have a whatever song that amps you up. Boom. Right. It's better than the, you know? So it's just like, but yeah, you can, I believe you can control it. Not 100% of the time, but I think that you can definitely make the choices in your lifestyle, have great accountability and do great things for sure. And it all starts in that brain.
No, I see your passion, man, right here. I'm sitting with you and those watching, you see it as well. And you can tell you're passionate about it. But here's the really important thing. Do you make your bed first thing in the morning?
Ah, my wife does.
Dude,
I'm so bad. I'll freaking leave it. I'm like, because I might.
Delegation.
You know, yeah.
Delegation. Yes. Great leadership quality.
He didn't mean that, babe.
Yeah.
Maybe he did. No, she's a big, like, put the pillows. Like, I don't need the decorative pillows. I can leave them on. I'll usually throw the blanket over and I'm good. She likes
Floofy,
the thing.
Yeah, make it look pretty.
Yeah, I'm like, who's coming in here? Our dogs. They don't know the difference.
I know. I find myself still I get up, I make my bed, and then I put on the little foofy, you know, whatever, throw pillows, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I kind of get that stuff going. And there is something about that. It's not because Admiral McCraven said it.
No.
It's because, you know, I just like being, you know, I just like my environments being squared away. You know,
mm-hmm.
I don't want crap everywhere. I don't like that disorganization. I feel like if it's your environment's disorganized, your mind's disorganized, mm-hmm. and then your life's disorganized, and it just keeps on going.
No, I agree with you.
And before you know it, you've stacked up all this disorganization to the point
I can tell
where,
by your desk, you're pretty organized.
Yeah, you feel like, it's cool. I can't.
No, it's good.
Yeah, then it's like, for a lot of people, I feel like they just let it all go, and then they feel like they can't really fix it. or right. they can't get out of it, or
which they can.
Yeah, they can.
By,
yeah.
by choices. Yeah. I like the biggest thing you brought up, such a great point, is I am such a firm believer in your morning routine.
Yeah.
Like your morning routine sets the stage of
the rest of your day
for sure. Yeah. Like for me, it's like get up, have some water with some electrolytes, get my coffee. I sit down and I read something.
Yeah.
I read for a good hour. Then the kids get up, getting ready for school, feed the dogs, hang out with them. And then like I do devotions with my wife and then I get ready to go to the gym or go to the fight gym or whatever it is. But the dude, that freaking like that morning routine is everything, man. I mean, I guess the point, like the mindset, what I kind of straight off is my wife gives me crap all the time because I like to match and look good. Like I'll go to the gym. I'm like, hey, which shoes? Which one looks better? Because I don't know. Like, I really don't know. And she's like, you're going to the gym. I'm like, I know. She's like, why do you care so much? She's like, of course. Are you trying to impress people? I'm like, no. Like, and I did this when I went out on combat missions. I want my stuff to look good because mentally it makes me feel like a warrior. Like I want to be ready to go. Like when I go to the gym, war's on, bro. Like it's right, me against right. the weights. I want to do the best I can. When I go boxing, I want to be looking good. I don't want to like just throw on some crap and be like, I'm just going to, I mean, you feel like you look like crap. You feel like you look like crap for other people. You're going to start acting like crap.
Yeah.
Like it all goes into, there's so many things that I believe that goes into it. I think that's one of them. And I get shit from her all the time. And then I'm like, why do you always look so nice?
Right.
Because she's stunning. That's why. But but I got to like match. I'm a weirdo with that, dude.
Yeah.
I am a weirdo.
I totally get it. I do. I kind of do the same thing. It's like I get up, I got my routine, and I very rarely am not dressed what I feel like is at least somewhat appropriate.
Right.
Right. It's not, I'm not a.
You gotta look the part, act the part, bro.
Putting on sweats on and like, you know, I just don't, I can't, I have to put on pants, a shirt and like, you know,
yeah, everyone's got
somewhat presentable. Yeah.
Some people got to put, like I, for a while, I had to put on a collared shirt.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And sit out in my own home to do work.
Yeah.
I felt like I had to dress for work, even though no one was watching.
Yeah.
Because I was getting to the point where I would go in my, what I was sleeping in.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is gross.
Doesn't feel right.
I don't feel right. So I'm like, okay, enough of this shower. I put on my pants. I put on my freaking nice shoes and I put on a collared shirt and I freaking started going to work and I became more productive.
Yeah.
And then I finally got out of that. Like, okay, I can do this because I know I'm going to go to the gym. So I'll do my workout stuff. I'll do my power hour, go do this. I'm going to come back, knock this out. So it's just kind of like everyone's different, got their own little thing, but I think you definitely need something.
Yeah.
If you don't, you're going to float like plankton.
Right.
That ain't fun.
Yeah. You hit on it. It's like you need discipline to get into a routine, but you need a routine to maintain the discipline.
100%. That is like perfect way to put
it. They feed on one another.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
We will be right back after the break.
All good stuff, buddy. Okay. So we are at that point.
All right.
To see if you can survive this podcast. So on the screen here, we're going to go through it together. It'll be fun. It'll be entertaining. But most importantly, for everyone listening, and keep safety and security at the forefront of your mind in an entertaining and hopefully valuable way. And by the way, I hope you never have to face any of these crazy ass scenarios we put together. Okay. So, are you ready, Eddie?
I'm ready.
Okay, scary music, start playing. Okay, here we go. All right, for this scenario, you will be on an airplane. It is a commercial flight from DC back to Texas, okay? You were out on the town meeting with clients. Now, you are on a flight back to Texas, okay? The flight departs DC in the morning on a Sunday, all right? And the flight allows you to choose which plane? So, are you going to choose a window seat or B, an aisle seat for this scenario?
There's a right answer and then there's Eddie's answer.
That's right.
I'm going B.
And I tell people all the time, there's a right answer and then
there's a right answer.
The
right
answer is A's answer. Here we go. Let's see. A or B, window or aisle? Hey, look at there. He gets
really?
Right. Yeah.
They used to be, and this probably was back in the 90s. They said always choose the window seat because if a plane gets taken over, people in the aisle are more likely to get beat down than the people by the window.
Yeah.
True story.
That was back
I thought that's where you're going to go with this.
You remember TWA?
They used, yes.
Yes. It got hijacked so many times they called it terrorist.
I remember watching that like, oh, wait, I'm like, dude, I want to be in the aisle so I can go do things.
Right,
like, I don't
right.
want to be trapped. But that's yeah. that's good. Okay, cool. Things have changed.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
great.
TWA used to be called Terrorist World Airlines.
Yep.
Because of all the hijacks.
So many of them.
But yeah, so you choose the aisle seat so you can get up quicker in case of an emergency.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I want to be able to move.
You take an aisle seat. You are seated about five rows from the front of the plane. In the air, you take out your laptop, all right, and you start to get some work done for about an hour. When you notice, okay,
da-da-da-da.
You notice an individual is now at the front of the plane, and he's talking to the stewardess in a weird manner. So do you A, ignore the individual and keep on working, or B, put your laptop away and keep an eye on the sketchy guy?
I don't like any of the answers. I would keep acting like I was working, but pay attention to what's going on. So I guess, can I choose A and a half and B and a half? put your left hand
I think you're going the right direction.
I'll do B.
B? Okay, let's see. Answer is? Yes, B. Look at you. Got 100% so far.
I feel like you'd be too obvious putting that away. Like,
well, hopefully, if it's a full plane, you know, I don't know. They didn't really set the set the theme here.
I'm
if it's a full
it's
plane
a,
or an empty plane.
It's
but
probably about the mask.
Yeah, you've got
this mask.
I know you love those masks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. If you're interested in some good pandemic mask humor, go over to Eddie's his Instagram. Okay, so yes, you put the laptop away and you keep an eye on the sketchy guy. Okay, so you keep your eye on him. Now the guy is getting really belligerent. Okay, he seems like he may be trying to enter the cockpit. Okay, so do you A, approach the front of the plane, or B, move to the rear of the plane?
Front.
Go to the front.
I'm going for him.
Yes, I mean, we're dealing with Eddie. He runs towards gunfire. Let's see what this the game
is. There's a Tom's disease right here.
Yes,
go to the back, I hope. What's going on there? Oh,
yeah, you don't want to miss
out. I'm engaging.
Here we go. A, you are correct. A is correct.
I'm engaging.
Good job. Yes, I knew. No, I wouldn't expect anything different either. Okay, so now you approach the situation at the front of the plane, and the stewardess are telling him to take his seat, and he is refusing to sit down, okay? So do you A, calmly ask if everything's okay, or B, grab the closest coffee pot and hit the guy with it?
Because I have those metal ones. Those things would not feel good.
They got good ones.
I'm about to go calmly ask because I want to defuse the situation.
De-escalate. Yes, it is
absolutely.
The word of the decade. That's for sure. Let's see what the
B
game.
B sounds really nice.
B is typical team guy, right? All right, let's see. A, you are correct. You want to calmly. Because what have we learned just dealing with clients and stuff? De-escalation. Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. If you can.
And if the big word here would be calmly. Hey, bro, what's going on here? Like, you're just escalating. You're like, are you yelling at me? Like, hey, yeah. Bro, is everything okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, the peanuts sucked. I agree with you. Like, just right. Manipulate the situation.
Yeah. One of the acronyms that comes to mind that we came up with at Escape the Wolf for our corporate folks on de-escalation is it is the word calm.
Mm-hmm.
C-A-L-M. C, remain calm above everything else. A, start paying attention to what the person is saying, because sometimes people just want to be heard.
Right.
And L is like, listen and lean in, like show them, even if you're faking it,
right,
that you actually care
right.
about what their problem is.
Yep.
And then M is manage and model. Model being the most important, like act the way that you would want him to act.
Mm-hmm.
If you start acting
the
like an
rule,
asshole,
baby.
Right.
There it is yeah. again. There it is
so,
again.
So calm. If all else fails,
that's
use
good.
The acronym
that's very
calm,
good.
People. And stay calm above everything else if you can't remember what the hell the acronym stands for. Okay. Moving on.
But back to that coffee pot.
Yes, maybe so. Let's see. All right. You ask what's going on. The stewardess moves away. So now you are in between the crazy guy and the flight attendants. The guy's about 8 feet away from you. The crazy guy grabs the coffee pot. Damn it. Not you. So do you A, assume the nonviolent posture, or B, close the gap and charge?
All right, so
him.
He just grabs the coffee
he
pot.
He just grabbed it.
I'm going to go with A.
A, assume the nonviolent posture. And so for those of you that don't know, what is your nonviolent posture, Eddie?
I just kind of spread my legs apart a little bit to like a fighting stance and kind of clasp my hands in front of me.
Yep.
Ready to go. I don't and yeah. put my fingers together and just kind of keep them next to me.
Yeah.
Or I might maybe put them on my hips or something. That's even too aggressive. I would just nonchalantly keep them like this.
Right. It's a very relaxed stance.
I'm ready to go if I need to.
There you go. I think that's key. What most people, your nonviolent posture can be whatever you train to. So if you want to do the typical negotiation stance, which is kind of hands up, hey, I don't want any trouble, and you're patting the air in front of you, but putting your hands between you and the bad guy, that's one way. Or what Eddie was saying, or like you're saying, is I can put my hands on my hips. But I also know that hands on the hips allows me to go straight to a quick jab to the face or something. Right. So I think the key is what you just said. You have to train to what, come up with whatever your stance is, but it's not a stance. It's not a fighting stance.
Definitely
it's
not.
It looks like a normal stance, but the reality is it's a Trojan horse of just whoop ass.
Yep. Right? You're ready to go to your stance. You're ready to go.
That's right.
Ready
You're
to
right. pounce. Okay. There we go. The nods. And answer is? Yes.
I'd be so impressed if it was charging.
Yes, I know. You're staying away from a lot of team guys that sit in that chair get sucked into those answers, which is you're doing good. Assume the nonviolent posture, okay? So for those of you listening, develop your nonviolent posture. It's really easy. Okay, so the guy, all right, now he's gonna step to the side and towards the door, the exit, all right, of the airplane. He puts his hand on the door handle and tries to open up the passenger door in flight, right? We know that's a bad thing. You're at like 30,000 feet. So do you A, knock on the door to the cockpit and tell the pilots that you need help, or B, now you're gonna neutralize this guy? I was trying to open up a door.
I'd get a cup of coffee and no, definitely B.
Yeah. Let's see what it says here. B, yes. Neutralize this guy. I mean, now this is a life-threatening
piece,
on. Right?
Yep.
And have you, I mean, how easy is it really to open up a door in flight?
You know, I don't know.
Is there I think there's some serious mechanisms in place. You just can't open it, right?
No, I think there's two. But I don't know with the pressure. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
For those of you that do this for a living, whether you're a flight attendant or a pilot, in the comments, anywhere on any of the platforms,
that's
please.
A good question.
Yeah,
that's a good
give
question.
Us that answer. Like, is it really that easy to open up the doors when you're at 30,000 feet? I suspect it's not that easy. I don't know.
I do know on the lavatory, they have the little metal plate.
Yeah.
If you can lift that, there's a secret little unlock thing. Did you know that?
Oh, yeah. I've seen some.
I posted that. A pilot's like, why would you show that? It's like, because people need to know about this stuff.
Right.
They might have a freaking passed out child or elderly person in there. They need to know how to get it. Like, we rely on everyone else to do it. So, but I see his point.
Yeah.
It's like our
hush-hush. Well, don't worry. I think I saw a TikTok video of it, you know, where they.
Sure. Yeah.
It's little security videos. Okay. Moving on. All right. While you have the suspect on the ground, because you are now a very experienced jiu-jitsu guy, do you A, communicate with the other passengers, right? Maybe, hey, give me some help, whatever. Mm-hmm. Or B, just knock them out.
I'd go with A.
A. Let's see. Yes. Communicate with the other passengers. Why?
Well, for one, I don't want someone that maybe didn't see everything was going on thinking I'm a bad guy attacking other people. I'd be like, hey, let's do this. Yeah. Let's give me some more bodies over here to neutralize this guy. Get some, I'm sure they have some zip ties on there or something to use. So, yeah, communication, man. Should move and communicate, right?
All right. I'm with you.
Communication.
I think it's important to get others involved to help you because you just, well, and you also don't know, is this guy alone?
Right. Exactly.
Is there others?
Exactly.
You know, so you got to almost kind of build your tribe very quickly because the number two, the number three belligerent person could just all of a sudden show up in your face. Okay. Moving on. You let other passengers and the crew know, right? You're communicating.
If you haven't already.
That you are a SEAL. I'm a SEAL. Now, would you do that? Would you say, I'm a SEAL?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think I would.
I don't think I would either. Yeah.
All right. And then control the suspect if need be, which you are, and work the other passengers
to restrain the suspect. The plane begins to descend for an emergency landing now. I'm sure the pilot, I don't know what the reason is. Maybe the pilots are hearing all of this scuffle outside. So do you A, lock the guy in the bathroom, or B, communicate with the pilots?
I would say B.
B? Yeah, I think B is probably pretty good. Let's see here. Yep, B. You got to communicate with the pilots. Keep them in the know. Mm-hmm. Let them know, hey, things are somewhat under control out here. What other good reasons to let, I mean?
Well, I mean, it's communication. If they don't know what's going on, I'm sure the stewardess or whatever, flight attendants, they're communicating what's going on. But everyone needs to know what's going on, for sure.
Right.
So people don't flip out, because we know people can flip out on planes.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's just, it's just good business.
You bring up a good point. Information is what prevents the panic.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And by the way, pilots are humans. They can panic as well.
Absolutely.
I think,
and you can see what happens when people put out misinformation.
Oh yeah.
I.e. the last 2 years.
Yeah, no doubt. All right. Moving on. The plane lands and the FBI boards the plane. Okay. Do you A, demand they let you off immediately, or B, work with the feds and tell them that everything that happened,
obviously,
yes, you're going to debrief, debrief,
ask for a badge.
Yes,
I'm gonna need a badge from you guys.
Get some credentials. You are right, to work with the feds and tell them everything you know. Once again, you're trying to, these days, especially with cameras and video cameras, you have to, without a doubt, convince them that you weren't the bad guy and that you were just trying to help, because you never know what the guy in the laboratory is going to tell them. And now it becomes word versus word. So cooperating to the fullest is always a good idea. What's next? Okay. The passengers ask if they can buy you lunch at the airport for saving their lives. So do you A, go find a place to rest, or B, enjoy the free meal?
I'd enjoy the meal. I'd enjoy the meal.
Take on the meal. Why not?
Take on the meal.
Yeah, get all the praises. Wait for the media to show up.
Yeah, perfect.
And then say, hey, I've got this company. It's called Contingent.
It's kind of crazy.
If you want a real life, no shit,
here we
security
go.
Guy, I'm your guy.
I'm actually going to put on a training course for planes next week.
There you go. I have just developed the curriculum.
That's crazy.
And yes, you have survived this podcast.
All right.
Good job. Any other airline safety tips that you can think of for someone who travels the globe and you work in the environment?
Man, I guess a big thing, one thing that we put out a while ago, is just know where your exits are, because if that thing fills with smoke, you ain't seeing a lot of stuff. You might see your little lights on the ground, but just know where your exits are, that if you need to get out.
Yeah.
And I always like for, and this might be an Eddie thing, I always like to know if I'm going over water.
Yeah.
Just in case, like, say we did go down, okay, the possibility of going into water, we might have to do that. So I like to know that, those things. But I mean a lot of your faith is in those pilots and that plane. So
technology.
Yeah.
And the pilot's really faith is in technology these days.
It really is. So it's
Yeah.
Get off the freaking plane and don't think for yourself. Help other people too if you can.
That's right. Unless you're drowning.
Exactly. That's your drowning. Save yourself first and then others.
Yeah, you can't save anyone unless you're dead. Hey, Eddie, thanks for coming on the show. Before we exit out of here, where can people buy Unafraid Gear, sign up for your mentoring, your new book? Can they pre-order it? Tell us everything you got.
Not yet. So eddiepenny.com has everything. That's where all the Unafraid Gear is. That's where the book, I'll sell signed copies on there. Everything else will be on Amazon, paperback, hardback, audio, and then Contingent Group, contingentgroup.com for any security things that people may need. But eddiepenny.com is the Unafraid. That's where everything is right now.
Okay.
Mentorship program is being developed, but I do one-on-ones to help some people with calls and stuff, but kind of working on it.
Okay.
To building that platform.
And then with the book, what's its launch date? Do you have one yet?
So we were told early as May, so I don't have an exact date. So I'm thinking more June, probably June, July. That's what I'm thinking.
Okay.
That's what they said, the soonest. So you know what that means.
Right.
So it's probably, but I mean, it's gone fast, man. Like I just got an email before I walked in here to work with the cover design guys.
Nice.
The book cover. So we're like, this is the final piece right here.
Perfect.
So it's coming along, man.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate
writing
it.
And finishing a book. I mean, like you said, it's one of those tasks. You just got to face it. There's aspects of it that suck, but once you're done, you're like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, it is.
I just hope it helps. I think it's going to help a lot of people, you know, in the faith community, people that are battling addiction, people that are transitioning out of the military, people that are going into the military, and spouses. Like, big time, especially for veteran spouses. It's going to help a lot of people and parenting.
Good.
So I think it's got a lot. And of course, there's war.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of love of it all. There's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears and all through it throughout. So it's really good, man.
Dude, it sounds like a badass
read. It's going to be good.
Badass read.
It's going to be good.
Okay. So there you go. There you have it. You can look up Eddie. That's Eddie, and that's Penny, Penney. You can probably Google him and find all of his stuff. If you get lost in all that traffic, you can go to my accounts. I follow him and everything that he has going on. Eddie Penny, thank you for coming on the show once again. And like I always say, keep it simple because crisis complicates the rest. And until next time, be safe out there.
Can You Survive This Podcast is a production of Calvary Audio and iHeartMedia. Recorded live from a secure location here in Dallas, Texas. Produced by Brandon Morgan, Jeff Apple, and Clint Emerson. Executive produced by Keegan Rosenberger and Dana Brunetti. For Calvary Audio, I'm Clint Emerson.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.